We have to look at the angiotensin system, which we described a little earlier when we were talking about autonomic pharmacology, because we got some very important antihypertensive drugs, and drugs, by the way, which are useful in congestive heart failure, that influence the angiotensin system. Angiotensin 1 is made by the action of renin, released from the kidney, from angiotensinogen, a compound made in the liver. Angiotensin 1 is then converted to angiotensin 2 by the action of an enzyme, which is a peptidase, called angiotensin converting enzyme, otherwise known as ACE or ACE. Now, angiotensin 2 has two major targets relevant to the maintenance of blood pressure. One is the adrenal cortex, where angiotensin 2 increases the formation of aldosterone, the major mineralocorticoid in our bodies. And what does aldosterone do? Well, it goes to the kidney from the adrenal cortex and acts to increase the reabsorption of sodium and carry with it the reabsorption of water. So this is an action that's going to be water and sodium retaining, increasing blood volume, and by increasing blood volume, you increase blood pressure. In addition, angiotensin 2 can act on blood vessels through its receptors to bring about a vasoconstriction. Now, if one can prevent the formation of angiotensin 2 by inhibiting ACE, or angiotensin-converting enzyme, you obviously are going to help lower blood pressure. You're helping because you are not making aldosterone, and you're helping because you're avoiding the vasoconstriction that angiotensin 2 can cause. Now, it turns out that the enzyme angiotensin-converting enzyme, or ACE, also metabolizes bradykinin, another peptide. Now, bradykinin is a vasodilator, and it is inactivated by ACE. If one inhibits its metabolism by this enzyme, we get higher levels of bradykinin occurring, and therefore a greater degree of vasodilation. So that makes a lot of sense to imagine that it's an advantage to increase bradykinin by virtue of inhibiting its metabolism, because that will be contributory to the lowering of blood pressure. So there are at least three things to be thought of in the context of ACE inhibitors in a mechanistic fashion. Now, we've had ACE inhibitors for about 15 years. There's about 8 or 9 of them out there in terms of clinical use. More recently, we've seen the introduction of some drugs that work on this system, but not by inhibiting the formation of angiotensin 2 or the breakdown of bradykinin, but actually working to antagonize the receptors for angiotensin 2 in both the adrenal cortex and in the blood vessels. So you're not influencing formation with angiotensin 2 receptor antagonists like losartan. Notice here the nomenclature is a little bit confusing. There are two types of receptor for angiotensin 2, AT-1 and AT-2. It's the AT-1 enzymes, which are receptors for angiotensin 2 that are blocked by the artan family like losartan. Now, losartan, while it will inhibit formation of aldosterone and inhibit the action of angiotensin 2 on blood vessels, will not do anything to bradykinin. You see, because these are receptor antagonists, they're not enzyme inhibitors. So they can't do anything to bradykinin, which obviously has a significance, as you'll see momentarily. Now, if we look at the pharmacology then in a way that sort of is descriptive, we've said already ACE inhibitors like the drug captopril. Most of the ACE inhibitors, in fact, I think all of the 9 of them, end in the word pril. I think we're still okay there to use that as a family name. So you'll decrease angiotensin 2. You will decrease the activation of receptors, both in the adrenal and in the vasculature. That is a very helpful action to lower blood pressure. You'll inhibit bradykinin metabolism, and we think that this is going to have an effect to enhance nitric oxide formation, and that would then get to a vasodilation and decrease peripheral vascular resistance. The antagonist drugs, losartan and the rest of the artans, block the actions of angiotensin II, but they don't affect bradykinin levels or do anything to enhance its effects. So here's a verbal description of what we were just saying, looking at that scheme. Now, both types of drugs are used in mild to moderate hypertension, and they've also become major drugs for the treatment of congestive heart failure, CHF. They slow the progression of nephropathy in patients who are diabetic with existing nephropathy. They decrease the efferent resistance in the glomerulus. Now, this is of much interest because many diabetic patients, of course, do have severe problems of nephropathy. And if you have to treat a diabetic patient who is hypertensive, and they often are, then this type of drug might be a very good choice because it slows the problem that's occurred during diabetes in terms of renal damage. However, you should recognize, and you'll see that in a moment, that these drugs actually also happen to be damaging to the kidney, although not specifically in that group of patients that already have renal damage. But in any event, it has always been considered an anomaly that in one group of patients it can be helpful to protect against further renal damage, and in most other patients there is the risk of possible renal damage due to the drug. You can anticipate that any drug that lowers blood pressure is likely to cause some degree of hypotensive sequelae. Hypovolemia can occur, sometimes with hemodynamic consequences. But probably one of the more striking things about the ACE inhibitors is the high incidence of a dry cough. That occurs with an incidence of about 1 in 3 patients. And it's very difficult to eradicate. You either sort of put up with it, you can try other drugs or other things that might be helpful, or you change therapy. But in any event, we think this is largely due to the formation, to the increased effect of bradykinin. Bradykinin not being metabolized may be responsible for the dry cough that we've seen there. Hyperkalemia can occur with the ACE inhibitors, and in patients who particularly have a renal artery stenosis, there may be renal failure. Sometimes we see angioedema. This is very interesting because there's a sort of a genotypic variant here. Black patients have at least 3 times the incidence of this rather severe state than the white patients. So, you know, there does seem to be some connection there. ACE inhibitors are okay in patients who are hyperlipidemic because they do not have effects on plasma lipids. However, they're not okay in pregnancy. This is the first group of drugs in the cardiovascular arena that we've come across where these agents should not be used in pregnancy. And that goes, by the way, for the angiotensin II receptor antagonists. They also appear to be teratogenic. So look for the problem there of renal failure, malformations in renal structure, skull malformations, and even fetal hypotension as being the reasons for not wanting to use these drugs in the pregnant patient. I should tell you that the incidence of dry cough is very much lower than 30% in patients who are on receptor antagonists. That certainly makes the idea fairly, I think, clear that bradykinin is being implicated in the cough. And we also think that bradykinin may be implicated in the angioedema that is seen. Let's just look for a moment at drugs and their vasodilating capability. Now we know some of these drugs or are reminded about some of these drugs, we can say which drugs are most likely to affect arteriolar tone. And among that category, 3 of the drugs happen to be the direct-acting vasodilators, diazoxide, hydralazine, and minoxidil. Which drugs will affect venular tone? Well, we haven't quite got to these drugs, really, although we did mention nitroprusside, and that would fit in there. But many of the drugs used in angina, the drugs like, for example, nitroglycerine or isosorbide dinitrate, are venular dilatants. And the rest of the drugs will actually cause dilation in both arterial and venular beds. Now remember this, orthostatic or postural hypertension results from venular dilatation, where you get pooling rather than from arteriolar dilatation. Excuse me for putting this in, really. It may be too obvious to you, but perhaps it isn't to some. Now, the family names of antihypertensive drugs can also be helpful for you in the game playing in terms of examinations. Olols, with the exception of labetalol and carvedilol, are usually beta blockers. As I said earlier, the prils are usually ACE inhibitors. The artans, like losartan, are angiotensin receptor antagonists. And the vascular selective calcium channel antagonists are the dipines, like nifedipine or nimodipine, etc. And so maybe this will help you to some degree in sort of sorting some of them out.